So during this talk, there is a mix of two different topics. And the reason for that is that the technique that we are using to measure this lensing effect allows us at the same time to measure the extinction effects due to the presence of dust and large gas around galaxies. So there will be a mix of the two. And at the end of the talk, there will be a cautionary word for what we are going to, from upcoming results from supernovae about dark energy. So this is a work that I've done in collaboration with Brian Scranton from UC Davis, Masataka Fukuda in Tokyo, and Gordon Richards in, at Drexel University. OK, so this is the outline. First, I'll talk about lensing and the application of it to measure the galaxy mass correlation. Then I will focus on magnification effects. So you are used to see results coming from the gravitational shear, the distortion, but not magnification, I guess. And then we'll be talking about dust on cosmological scales. All right, so I guess you all know about that, the effects, the observable effects of lensing, the shear and the magnification, which we can measure in some case around an isolated object if we are in the strong lensing regime where we have these large distortions and amplifications. If we go far away from these regions when we are in the weak lensing regime, we have to apply statistical estimators to measure something. So I'm going to present first some results obtained with the shear, and most of the talk is going to focus on what we can learn with magnification. So we have these two observables. There are also time delays, but I'm not going to discuss them today. And so the idea is that from the magnification and the shear, we can estimate the convergence kappa, which is the projected mass along the line of sight, given by this relation here. And this is measured over some aperture. So this is nice because there is no assumption you can directly get all the matter along the line of sight, any type of matter, luminous and dark matter. We can measure the moments of the matter distribution, cross correlations between mass and light and so on, and we can do direct mapping if the signal to noise is large enough. So one useful tool for studying galaxy formation in a cosmological context is to look at the galaxy mass correlation function. And so if we look, if we start from numerical simulations, we have an n-body simulation of dark matter. So out of this simulation, we can measure several quantities, for example, the mass autocorrelation function. And we can also identify halos in this dark matter distribution, and we can compute the halo mass cross correlation. Okay, and this is what is shown in this plot, result by Hayashi and White. So in green, we have the mass autocorrelation, and the dashed and dotted lines show for different halo masses the halo mass cross correlations. This is interesting for galaxy formation because in these halos, galaxies are going to form, and we observe them. So from this, we can go one step further, and we can talk about the galaxy mass cross correlation. This is something we can observe. And those are for different galaxy luminosities or magnitudes, the predictions according to some simple models for the distribution of light and mass. So this is useful for studying galaxy formation. I guess most of the people here are not interested in this. But as I said, at the end of the talk, I'm going to talk about things you're more interested in, like dark energy. I'm just going through these steps first. So with lensing, what we are measuring are two-dimensional quantities. Everything is projected. So I'm going to focus from now on the projected galaxy mass correlation function. And this has been measured now for a number of years using shear, so measuring the distortion of background galaxies induced by foreground galaxies. And some of the results are shown here. So this galaxy mass correlation function, so here R is in two dimensions. It's a projected radius. So those are just conversions. So it's directly related to the projected mass as a function of radius. And this projected mass is something we can measure with the gravitational shear. This is the tangential shear around galaxies, which we observe directly. And this is related to this quantity, which is then related to the galaxy mass. So we can measure this. This is here, shown here with these data points. It has been done by a number of teams and a number of years. So this is something we know quite well. And this is interesting because if we go back to this result from the simulations, if we look at the galaxy mass or the halo mass correlations, there are some distinctive features here which show the transition between the so-called one halo model, where we are seeing mostly the dark matter distribution within one halo. And on large scales, we have the two halo term, which shows the clustering between halos. And this is a distinctive feature, which is predicted by lambda CDM to happen at those scales for those masses. that's important because if we are talking about different types of gravity like Mond, we would have different scales for different pHs here. So if we measure this, that's also an interesting test for gravity. And one example here, this is a result by Rachel Mondenbaum and collaborators. This is taking galaxies with different luminosities. And in black and purple, we see galaxies in low density environment and high density environments. And as you can see, we can see the difference between the one halo term on small scales and the two halo term on large scales, which changes a lot depending on the luminosities of the galaxies, which is just another way of showing this plot here or this one with the halo here. So people are measuring this with gravitational shear. And something else that can be done is to probe the shape of dark matter halos. So on small scale, we can measure the tangential shear of the background galaxies to probe the mass. And we can check whether this mass is azimuthally symmetric or whether dark matter halos are elliptical and whether this ellipticity correlates with light. So this has been done. There are several constraints by a number of groups out there. Again, it's based on the gravitational shear. OK, so now let's see what we can do with magnification. So this is just an illustration of magnification effects. Here I'm showing a regular grid of background sources. They are point sources. So we don't have any shape information. I put the lens in front of them. This is what happens. They get brighter, and at the same time, their position shifts, which creates a dilution effect. And the idea is that this is something we can measure. So if we take background sources like quasars, for example, by measuring the magnitude of these quasars and showing that they are brighter, we can estimate the magnification. We can go back to this galaxy mass correlation. OK. So the sky is not as regular as this. If we want to do anything, we need to do correlation functions. So the basic tool is going to look at the correlation between quasar magnitudes, so background quasars, and the overdensity of foreground galaxies. And we would like to see whether quasars are brighter when they are closer to galaxies. And so this is for the theorists in the room. The change of magnitude due to gravitational lensing is going to just follow this simple relation. So now in the previous picture, you could see the magnification effects because we were in this situation. I started with quasars of background sources that all had the same magnitude, and they were brightened because of the lensing effects. But in reality, things are not like this. What we have to work with are magnitude-limited samples. The situation is a little bit different. So here, if I plot the number of objects as a function of magnitude for a given survey, I'm going to have limiting magnitude somewhere. So I start with the green curve, then I turn on some lensing effects, everything gets brighter, I get the red curve. And now if I ask what is the mean magnitude of these objects before lensing, so I simply compute the mean magnitude, I get a number. If I ask what is the mean magnitude after lensing, I get exactly the same number. So with a magnitude-limited sample, the mean magnitude of the sample doesn't change if we have this kind of distributions. Due to lensing, this is because some objects can cross the limiting magnitude with lensing and become observable, and they counteract this effect. So if you want to measure anything, we have to use sources for which the luminosity function is going to depart from the power law. And in that case, so we do measure a change in the mean magnitude. The details are not very important. What you should just get is that the change, the mean magnitude change that we observe is going to be different than the induced magnitude change, okay? In general, this quantity is going to be lower than this one. We can write down how they vary. And just remember that if we have this power law luminosity function, this constant here is exactly zero. We cannot measure anything. All right. So let's see what we can do with real data now. So what we did, we used the SDSS survey, the R4. So the distribution of galaxies in the sky is shown here. And this is the redshift distribution of the objects. So we have foreground galaxies in blue here with a median redshift at around 0.3. And then we have background quasars. And we chose those quasars so that the redshifts do not at all overlap with the redshifts of the foreground galaxies, so that we are sure that if we find any correlation, they will be due to lensing, not to physical clustering or anything. All right. And this, those are the number counts of quasars as a function of magnitude. It's like the luminosity function I was talking about before. And the nice property is that this is not just a Paolo luminosity function. We have a constant change of slope, and therefore we can apply the estimator I presented just before and hope to measure something. Okay, so this is what we got after quite some work. So what I'm showing here is the correlation between quasar magnitude and galaxy overdensity. So what you can see first is that this is a negative quantity. So if the galaxy overdensity is positive, it means that the magnitude shift of the quasar is negative. And because magnitudes are always going in the wrong direction, this shows that this is brightening. So what we are seeing here is the expected lensing effect. So as quasars get closer and closer to galaxies, as the angle gets smaller and smaller, they get brighter and brighter. So we are measuring mean magnitude changes that are of the order of 10 to the minus 1 to 10 to the minus 4. And we are probing an impressive range of scales from about 15 kiloparsecs to several megaparsecs. So here we have cosmological scales. Here on small scales, we are going to be dominated by the signal from individual galaxies. And here we have large scale structure, basically. Okay. So what is interesting with this plot is that if we measure this effect in two different bands, there is a systematic shift between blue and red. And this is a worry because if it's only magnification, magnification is achromatic. We do not expect this type of effect. So there is something else going on. Now, if we look at five different bands on small scale, so this is just a zoom on what is going on here. So we see that there is a continuous wavelength-dependent effect going from red to blue. So these letters are just filters in the optical from 0.4 to about 0.8 micron. So there is something going on which occurs on top of the magnification. And this is expected if we have some dust on large scales around galaxies. So if we have some dust, the magnitude change of quasars is going to be as follows. There will be a negative shift. This is a brightening due to gravitational lensing. And there is a positive contribution, the dust extinction, which is wavelength dependent. So this is very likely what we are seeing here. And this is not a negligible effect. As you can see, it changes. So the signal is dominated by magnification, but there is a non-negligible change due to dust extinction. Okay, so what we can do, we can try to isolate this effect. So instead of simply looking at the correlation between quasar magnitude and galaxy overdensity, we can look at the correlation between the color, so I'm taking magnitudes at two different wavelengths and the same galaxy overdensity. In that case, there will be no more contribution from lensing. We are going to measure a correlation between the color excess of quasars and the galaxy overdensity. So this is what we get. So again, these letters, denote different filters in different, at different wavelengths. And here I'm showing all the different color combinations we can get with the SDSS survey. And what you are seeing here is that as the angle between quasars and galaxies is smaller, quasars are becoming redder and redder. There is no lensing at all, it's a color change. So this is quite interesting. This is suggesting that there is dust on large scales around galaxies. But first, I would like to say that this was a surprise because there is almost nothing in the literature about this. The only result that we could find with a similar experiment goes back in 1994 by Zaritsky, and he used foreground and background galaxies, looked at the color change of the background galaxies. He found some reddening, but this is not very significant, and there was no detection on scales greater than 50-ish kpc. So in comparison here, so we are probing scales going from about 15 kpc to several megaparsec. So we are really exploring a new territory, and we are getting the first data points in all this region here. Okay. So what is dust? Just to illustrate, this is a dust cloud in our galaxy. And the interesting property, so it's going to have a the extinction, which is wavelength dependence, and we can very well map the way it depends on wavelengths. So this is an illustration. From this point, we can plot the extinction curve, so the amount of extinction as a function of wavelengths. So there is more extinction in the blue. And then we can go back to our data points and see what kind of dust we find on large scales around galaxies. So here we have information about wavelengths, so we can just try to compare our results to this kind of standard extinction curve. So with the optical data that we have, we can probe this region of the extinction curve. And here I'm showing on small scales and on large scales around galaxies the color excesses that we find. And the slope of this extinction curve is related to the size distribution of the dust particle and dust particles. And the green dashed line here shows the extinction curve of our galaxy in the disk. So this shows that in the optical, at least, the extinction that we have is very similar. The slope of the extinction curve is similar to the slope of data for our own galaxy. So presumably, we have a similar type of dust particles out there in the halo. So the dashed line is the extinction curve for our galaxy, and the blue is the best fit to the data points. Yeah, so there is an amplitude and a curvature for the field. Yeah. And what's important here is mostly the curvature of these plots. And so people working with dust, they like to use these parameters AV and RV. AV is the amount of dust, and RV is the slope of the extinction curve. And here, for example, we find something which is 4 plus or minus 2. And for the Milky Way, we find a value of 3.1. So it's quite consistent. Yeah, very exactly the same. If you overplot the SMC, SMC, LMC, and Milky Way, they are almost on top of each other here for the shape. But then they differ in the UV. So the LMC and SMC, they do not have this bump at 0.2 micron. So I'm coming to that in a minute. They do not. OK. So this is nice, because we can now quantify the properties of these dust particles, and therefore the extinction as a function of wavelengths. Roughly, we find that the extinction goes like lambda to the power of minus 1.2. So if we go back to our initial results, OK, the brightening of quasars as they get closer to galaxies. So now we can write down this. We know that this magnetic shift has one magnification term, which is achromatic. And then there is this wavelength dependent term. And now we know what the index here is. So what we can do, we can take this measurement. And for the first time, nobody did that before. For the first time, we can correct for this extinction and extract only the magnification part. And if we do that, this is what we get. So we just go from the magnitude shift to the magnification. And then I'm going to present the results in terms of projected mass, okay, solar masses per square parsec. This is something that people like to see. So in blue, what you see is the mean mass profile around galaxies that we get from magnification measurements. And in gray, for a different sample of galaxies, this is what people find using the gravitational shear of the background galaxies. So very nicely, we see that the two methods, we are not looking exactly at the same galaxies, but let's just compare those two samples within a factor two. It's already good enough. And we see that we have a nice agreement between the two for the amplitude and the scale dependence. And those two results come from samples which are about the similar size. So we can do useful thing with things with magnification. One nice aspect of it is that we can probe smaller scales with less systematic effects. And we can go to very large scales. So this is nice. We can learn a lot about the way galaxies populate dark matter halos. And I guess that's not the interest of most of the people here. But I just wanted to mention that now we can measure magnification, correct for this extinction, and it does work. OK. So let's continue.
Is there something that we didn't already know that we learned?
This is just consistent. And for example, this is one example. So going back to this initial simulation, so there is this pHR predicted at the scale, which is somewhere below 1 megaparsec, the transition between 1 and 2 halo term. This is in 3D. This is now in 2D. This is what lensing can probe. You find a similar feature. There is a change of slope at this scale. And if we go back to our results, we need to do a quantitative comparison. But you know, around here, there seems to be, again, a change of
scale. So how about very small scales? Is that consistent with the Hubble model or not?
We haven't done a detailed comparison of what is going on here, but that's going to be the next step, yeah. You can redo everything that people did with shear, but with magnification. And it's nice because we are sensitive to different systematics, so there are different problems. So if we have agreement, we can have better confidence in the results. OK, so now let's move on. Let's talk a bit about dust on cosmological scales. So the goal of the first part was just to show that if we measure magnification, we have this dust extinction, which is in the way. We have to correct for it. But now let's see what we can learn from this distribution of dust on large scales from galaxies. So we had all these reddening measurements. So quasars get redder as they get closer to galaxies as a function of different wavelengths. We can compress that into one single function to make things more simple. So this is showing the reddening of quasars as a function of scale. And on the right side, I'm showing the extinction that we expect to have for one value of the slope of the extinction curve, which is the galactic value. So what this is telling us is that if we have a light ray passing close to a galaxy, let's say at like half an arc minute or 100 kiloparsec, there will be an extinction, which will be about 1% in the visual band.
So what's this line you've drawn? I mean, like
it's just the best fit power. Nothing. Just to get the amplitude in this one.
But it has a correlation function has like the same slope?
They are very similar, yeah. The ratio between the two is very close to flat. I think there is some excess on some scales.
So should I learn that this the dust is universal? Is that air conversation?
So the properties of the dust in the optical, if we go back to this plot. Oops. So the dust that we find here, we are proving scales of like 100 kiloparsecs or more. So the properties of the dust in the optical are similar to the properties of the dust in our galaxy.
But also the fact that the galaxy distribution is the same as the extinction distribution.
It means that on large scales, dust follows light.
That's
mass.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Statistically. But just one more word about this. Again, if we take the extinction curve, we have with this analysis, we have data points only in this wavelength range. So I cannot say that all the dust is the same. That's just dust giving rise to extinction in this delta lambda is going to be similar. That's the only thing I can say. But that's already quite interesting. OK, so let's continue. All right, so this is telling us that there is some distribution of dust in the halos of galaxies on large scales around galaxies. Again, we are probing scales going to several megaparsecs. So this also implies that if we take random lines of size towards a high redshift universe, we will also have extinction due to this dust component, which is located on large scales around galaxies. And this can be problematic for studies of supernovae. So just going back to lensing first. With lensing, we are not affected by this because the mean magnification over the whole sky is unity. So on average, magnification doesn't change the mean luminosity of the sample. There is no change in the first moment. But with dust extinction, it's different because there will be extinction. It is cumulative along the line of sight. It does not average to zero. And it is redshift dependent. So if we take a random lines of sight in the universe, we expect to have a mean opacity. And this mean opacity is going to depend on how many galaxies we have along the line of sight and what is the cross-section for or the optical depth for this dust extinction. So just taking this results and using a toy model for just having random light rays towards higher redshift, this is what we find. So this is the extinction for different wavelengths, in blue, black, and orange. U-band, D-band, I-band. And this is the opacity of the universe that we expect as a function of redshift. So this is telling us that if we go all the way to redshift 1, there will be, on average, an extinction, which will be about 5 times 10 to the minus 2 magnitudes. And this is on average. On top of this, there will be a scatter as well. So the results that I've shown today, they were calibrated with galaxies that are at redshift 0.3. So in order to predict what is going on there, we need a little bit of extrapolations, and there are different ways we can do that. But these curves are basically showing a range of possible values that we expect. All right. Now, supernovae. I guess you all know about that. This is the distance modulus of supernovae, difference between the observed magnitude and the intrinsic magnitude. And this is what we observe. The dashed line is what we would have for a universe without lambda. And this is an indication of lambda. We get constraints on omega matter of W. Now, the point is that along the line of sight, as we have seen, we do expect to have some extinction on average. So there will be some contribution of this, which is going to affect this supernova here. If you look at the amplitude of the effect, as I said, we have something which is about 5 times 10 to the minus 2. It depends on the band. This is going to go up, so it's going to be larger than that. But anyway, so there is some contribution of this, which is plugged in here. And currently, what supernovae people do is the following. They measure the brightness of the supernovae. First, they correct from dust extinction in our galaxy, because we know we have a map of the dust extinction in our galaxy. And then they know that the distance modulus is going to be some function of cosmology, which is here, assuming that they are standard candidates. And then there is coefficient due to the stretch factor. They have to renormalize the time dependence of the luminosity curves. And then there is a correction for dust extinction. And they have 2 free parameters here, alpha and beta, and they fit for them. And so at the end of the day, what they do is that, so they measure reddening, but they need extinction. So they do a reddening to extinction correction, which is based on one number, which is the best fit parameter they get here. And the problem is that this number, so first as they quote, so they find beta of 2. And for dust extinction, this requires an extreme value of RV. RV is the slope of the extinction curve. So they find a value of RV of 1. So the point is that the value that we find is RV consistent with 3. So there is a component of dust extinction which is due to this, which is corrected in their results using a value of RV of 1. And this is not what we find. So there is already something a little bit worrying there. It's not affecting the current result. I mean, this is not going to change this curve into that one. But if we want to go from a 10% accuracy to a 1% accuracy, this effect is going to become relevant. Right, so what I guess people will have to do soon. So they already correct for galactic extinction because we know about it. But now we have seen that from this result, we know about this cosmic extinction along the line of sight on average. And we know what this RV value is. So probably what people will have to do, maybe there are better ways, but one simple way is just to subtract this mean component from the results, and then they can do their standard analysis. So this is just a cautionary word about the results we will be seeing on supernovae in the next few years, and I guess this kind of effects will be included. And at the moment, they are not. Okay. I'm going to summarize briefly. So during the first part of the talk, I showed that we can detect gravitational magnification going from galactic to large structure scales. And the signal seems to show the characteristic feature predicted by lambda CDM. We have very nice agreement between magnification and shear. And on top of the magnification, we can detect this wavelength-dependent effect, which we think is due to dust extinction. And we have got the first, the first detection of this dust extinction on very large scales around galaxies in a regime that was not probed before. And this has implications for the opacity of the universe, which then has implications for estimating the brightness of this standard candidates. So what we are going to do next is to see how an error by not taking this effect into account propagates into the contours for W and W primes. OK, thank you.
Time? Questions?
You said something about just giving a mapping for populating halos with galaxies, like giving information about that? Or what is it? Did you say that, or did I hear that?
So what is your question exactly?
Something about, you said that some of these results were going to tell us something about the mass function for, like, how many galaxies go into a particular dark matter?
Yeah, so the galaxy mass correlation is a way to go from light to mass.
Yes.
And you can test that for different galaxy luminosities or different halo masses, depending on where you want to start from.
Right. So you can. Is this going? But how far down does this will this extrapolation go? I mean, are you going to be able to use this to? Let me think about my question.
Okay.
Other questions?
Yes.
So to get RB of 1, you know, what would you need?
Also, it's a much steeper extinction curve, which is not really seen in galaxies that we know. And which.
But you want to get that, what would you do with the dust particles? Which make them smaller?
So the size distribution is going to be tilted, so you will need more smaller particles to get it in the right way.
And dust is dominated, I guess, you know, by the host galaxy of the supernova,
right? The dust is dominated by the host galaxy, yes, if you take one supernova. But that's not really what you want to. What, I mean, at the end, they do an average over many supernovae. So you also care about, you know, if there is a net mean effect due to this dust along the line of sight.
But you mostly care about, I guess, in the average dust particles in
the. Yes, at the 10% level, yes. But if you want to do better than that, then there are extra contributions. It's like dust in our galaxy.
So whenever they find this crazy value for RV, does that mean just their fit is bad? Or, I mean, how would you interpret that? Why are they giving that as their best fit?
I don't know. I would have to look at the details of what is not exactly, but my first reaction would be to say that the model that they are using is not
just
complete.
Makes sense.
And this is calling for extra components.
Okay, there is no more question. Oh, you can ask more questions because I'm having trouble here. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you have evidence for dust that's not in humans?
So that's a more complicated thing to know. We measured the galaxy dust correlation function, and now there are different ways of going from that to the actual distribution of dust. You know, you would need some kind of halo model. And there are a number of three parameters there, so it's up to you to. So I don't have the definite answer to that. But it suggests that there is dust, you know, in the names of galaxies. And to what scale, I don't know.
So, no more questions? Last chance?
John, it seems that the Mike and I are dongle challenged.
Do you have I am also dongles.
They have one
more. I'll only two dongles.
So our last talk of this session, this is not the last question though, is by Tom Slosnicki, who recently joined us, and so It's an observational constraint on the isolation of the solid case. Is it working? Working? Okay. You can start talking and I can